You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. This is edition 271. On the broadcast today, I'm going to be speaking with independent filmmaker Frank Lopez. Frank speaks about a recent effort that he has been undertaking to document land-based struggles of the Nedisu, which is an indigenous community located in territories that are today called Quebec. This is a community also known as the Atikamekw. This community has a number of points of resistance to clear cutting. This is Quebec-based companies like Arbec and other major producers of wood for construction and other industries who are doing massive clear cuts on the traditional territories of the Nedisu. And there has been in recent years a number of important road blockades that have been put up by Indigenous land defenders in this area. So we're talking about a region that is in the north central part of Quebec, close to the city of Latuk, and very particularly not far from the small town of Parent, where there's a pulp and paper mill. Around this region, Nedisu land defenders have been blocking at various times huge industry logging trucks. And Frank Lopez, a filmmaker who's living outside of the city of Montreal in Quebec, more north, has been going to document these land-based struggles and has been sharing these films in the context of both community events and also in the context of the community trying to get the word out. I would note that this is a very underreported story, so I'm really happy to share this interview with filmmaker Frank Lopez. You can learn more about his work at amplifierfilms.ca, where you can also get the info about these particular films looking at the frontline road blockades and resistance of the Nedisu Indigenous community. So here's my conversation with Frank Lopez for Free City Radio. Frank Lopez, you've been making efforts for some time to try to communicate through video and film different land-based struggles of Indigenous communities, often on the sort of front lines of where basically neocolonial capitalist infrastructure is digging into Indigenous land, whether it's to dig out trees, whether it's to build a pipeline, to create mining projects. And these are projects taking place where you have, you know, significant opposition from Indigenous community elders and also people across generations. So you've drawn people's attention in this recent project to a situation about 4 hours north of Montreal, please correct me on timing, where you have a frontline context of an Indigenous community that has been opposing essentially clear-cutting backed by the Quebec government on their territory. So, Frank, if you could just locate us by a brief introduction and then just a breakdown, you know, just on a basic level, about this recent set of short films you've made about Indigenous blockades and protests of clear cutting on their land.
Yeah, it was sort of serendipitous. I recently, in 2021, I moved to Lanaudière. I was thinking to myself, wow, what a relief to be out here in the country to weather the pandemic, you know, and to have a little bit of chill time to myself and to with my family and sort of get acquainted with this region. And lo and behold, not even a couple of weeks after moving in, folks from the Nedisu community close to where I live, which is Manouane, is the reserve, threw up a blockade to bring attention to the logging in that community. And so really this began like, you know, right now it'll be a 5-year relationship with this community, well, members of this community that are essentially pretty angry that there's no limit to the logging that's happening there. And then sort of all of this came to a head a couple of years ago when a company, in order to access a big lot that they wanted to log, they cut a bunch of maples. They cut a chunk of maple trees to build a road to access this. And for a lot of people who don't know, the Narizu, just like many indigenous nations from around here, harvest the maple water in the spring. And this was a big part of their yearly harvest that was gone. And so there was another blockade that was thrown up there. And so what's been happening is that every spring, I've been going up. I would get these calls sort of last minute. And it's like, we threw up a blockade. Can you please come here and document? And so through doing this work, we connected with another community in Wemontashi, who are much farther away from where we are. I think they're like 6 hours from where I live in La Nodier. And they were facing a similar situation. They had started blockades the year before, but I couldn't get out there, and they were calling for support again. And a friend of mine and I went, and there was a couple of more supporters from Montreal. But for the most part, it was just folks from the community who were there blocking a road that facilitated for workers to go to a bunch of different logging zones. And it's not that they were blocking altogether, but they were making it very hard for them to get there. So if they couldn't get through that road, they would be adding like 3 hours or so to their travel time. And so it was a bit of an annoyance, but for me, it was like very, very eye-opening, because on that day, the Atikamekw land defenders, the Narizu, sorry, land defenders, were met with a bunch of very angry forestry workers or loggers, however you want to call them, including also the management of the company, who were very angry. And I witnessed a lot of racism very openly being yelled at these land defenders. And they were vastly outnumbered. I'm not going to say that there could have been violence, but it definitely felt like a dangerous situation. The Quebec police was there, the Sûreté de Québec, the SQ, and the SQ basically was there observing, much to the chagrin of the owners of the company, who were asking for the land defenders to be arrested. So from that, a short video report was created, and it had an impact. Huh? It's pretty amazing how these things can actually make a difference, particularly because since these regions are so far away, the media doesn't always get there, and sometimes it's up to people like me who are independent, who have, you know, a little chunk of time to actually shine a light on these things. And so they were very pleased with that, and so they invited us to a second time to go back, but this time they took us to a lot of the logging sections, and they wanted us to document that, to fly the drone over them and see how much things are cut. And it was astonishing. And I think that, you know, people will observe from the video also the large wood piles that are left behind and that are being turned into wood for construction. It's a massive zone, and the Department of Forestry in Quebec really wants companies to ramp up the logging even more. It's a dire situation considering where we are ecologically with the planet, particularly the loss of biodiversity, the fact that forests are burning uncontrollably, and, you know, like we're seeing animals disappear right before our eyes. And for the Narizu, this is all part of their way of life, and that is being stolen from them as well. So yeah, this is why we do what we do. And you know, I think I would close by saying that my hope is that people with the skills or with the time could go support actions like these, not only as media workers, which is actually massively important, but also as you know, people as warm bodies, as solidarity, you know, bring resources and whatnot. And what I usually tell people is that these are really great opportunities to get to know folks in these communities, where these opportunities don't really they're not really available to us that often, and blockades are, there's a lot of dead time, and there's a lot of time to talk and get to know each other. And so these are opportunities that really people need to grab them and understand the importance of them.
The last point you mentioned, I think, is so important. I've been also in different blockade contexts, and the conversation and trust building that happens, it's just totally different. You're not on the screen, A, and B, you're outside of sort of capitalist time, in a sense. You're shutting down capitalism, you know, in some shape or form. That's pretty meaningful and moving context and comment. So thank you. Can you just locate us a bit more geographically where you're talking about and describe a little bit more of the footage that you're sharing in these videos and sort of what you were trying to illustrate by sharing this footage and sort of the urgency of the issue?
Well, Montachy is north of La Touque. If you look at a map of Quebec, I guess you will get heading up to Saguenay and then and taking the road to La Touque. And then La Touque is the last settler town, so it's a pretty big city. Like, there's a pulp mill there, so you know you can really tell by the stink that you got to La Touque, because there's all this smoke being generated by the pulp mill, and then the road ends, and so then you're taking a logging road. I think is for 65 or 70 kilometers. And so it's pretty stunning, not stunning, it's pretty shocking, I would say, that you're going through this logging road, and it's very wide. And the reason why it's wide is because they need to make it wide for all the logging trucks that are going to be bringing the wood out. It's fairly well maintained, and so people can actually go fairly faster, and you see the logging trucks, you know, going down like 100 kilometers per hour, filled with the wood that they took from the forest. And from that moment on, you start seeing clear cuts all the way up till you get to Wemontachi, which is the reserve where this particular Nelly Sioux community is from. And the reserve itself is small. You know, there's some services there, but you definitely see like the poverty that's there as well. You know, this is the piece of land that was given to them by the government. And but as soon as you leave from the reserve and actually flying a drone is an incredible tool, because once you fly up, you can see how beautiful this area is. It's just nothing but woods, rivers and lakes. It's just stunning. And these folks started blocking the road and set up a checkpoint at a road that leads to a town called Paran, and Paran, like parent in English, and Paran is the home of a very massive wood mill owned by Arbec. This is basically like a super highway for moving workers into and out of logging zones. And so blocking this road was fairly significant. But it's pretty interesting that you see that nobody wants to really exacerbate the situation by arresting any of the land defenders. I've never seen anything like this, to be completely honest. And having private conversations with people tell me that the SQ really watches what they do. Ever since the Oka crisis, the so-called Oka crisis in Ganasetagi and close to Montreal, the mayor of La Touque, the settler community that I spoke of, was fairly angry because he expected the cops to act, and the cops are just, you know, passing the baton. They're saying like, no, this is not our deal. This is the provincial government, the provincial government, and the provincial government says like, no, it's the federal government, and so nobody wants to touch it, and so it provides these land defenders with a unique opportunity to make some headway in their struggle. And it was very inspiring to see them, like, you know, once again take ownership of their land. I mean, it was as a decolonizing moment as I have ever witnessed in person. And they will go into the offices of Arbec and demand to see the logging plans, demand to ask who gave permission to log in certain zones. And you know, it projects a certain authority, not in the authoritarian way, but in the, like, you know, people know that this is their land, and so when they come through, people listen and stop what they're doing and pretty much get out of their way.
We will link to these films also for people to learn more and to engage with them. So 2 points quickly. You mentioned the Oka Crisis of 1990, which basically saw indigenous land defenders blocking an attempt to build a golf course on a traditional burial site of members of the Six Nations community in Gaddisatagi. So people might be familiar a bit more with the geography and the indigenous community present in that context. Can we just return back, if you could explain to us a bit more about, because you talked about an indigenous reserve close to Parent in Quebec, Parent. Yeah, can you maybe just tell us a little bit about the makeup of the indigenous community, just so people can understand where you're talking about and also which community it is? Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So if you follow the Saint Laurent River towards Quebec City, what used to be a Haudenosaunee territory, well, what is Haudenosaunee territory, sort of peaks out like north of Montreal, right? And around there is where Nerissou, or most commonly known as Atikamekw territory, begins. And it's a large piece of land about the size of Austria. The Nerissou were given three different reserves in which to have their communities, and one is Manawan, the other one's Wemontashi, and the third one I'm going to have to tell you later because I don't remember offhand. And it's pretty striking because in these communities, they're fairly isolated. Like, they're in the middle of the woods. You have to go through, for all three, you have to go through logging roads to get to them. So it's access to different things is fairly hard for these communities. These are communities that are very poor, where there's, at least in Wemontashi, I know there's a housing crisis there. Like, there's not enough homes to shelter everybody in the community. But also it's very striking that the Nerissou still speak their language. It's actually the first language, and French being their second one. And for me, that's extremely powerful because in other communities that are losing their language, maybe it's a positive effect of them being isolated is that they actually kept their maternal tongue, and that's what all the children speak it. Everybody speaks it, and you can tell that French is not their everyday language because it's as a second language as it is to me, or a third language as it is to me. So it's a community that's very much in tune with their traditions and with their and with nature and you know, just like a lot of different communities, you know, there's always a tug of war between the band councils and the traditionalists, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, creation of jobs versus protection of the environment, which is very important to them. And so right now, Manawan is the reserve that's closest to Montreal. So it's you know, if you can find Saint Michel de Saint on a map, I guess it will be about 4.5 hours, 5 hours from Montreal, and then the next one is Wemontashi. And close to Manawan and close to the town of Saint Michel de Saint, they're also starting not a lithium mine, but forget it. It's a material that's used for building batteries, and it's ironically the company who's building it is called Nouveau Monde, New World Mining. Obviously, that's a reference to Christopher Columbus, which is, you know, the original colonizer. which, I mean, I don't know if the company actually has any clue. They just really gave us a very easy thing to point out, but that's what it is. And I think that a point of reference for folks about the Nerissou is a very sad story. The Ishakwan family is one of the families of Manwan. Their daughter, Joyce, was in a hospital in Joliet. This is the closest hospital that they have. It's about 3 hours, 3.5 hours from where they are. Joyce was in this hospital, and she was really badly mistreated by the staff there. And Joyce recorded the racism that was directed towards her. And sadly, Joyce died in the hospital. And this sort of launched the Atikamekw to ask for justice. Justice for Joyce became like the rallying cry. And I have to say, I've been to a bunch of indigenous-led marches in my life while I've been in so-called Canada. But I went to one march led by Atikamekw folks in Trois-Rivières, and I've never been to an indigenous solidarity march where the majority of the people were indigenous, at least not in so-called Canada. And that was extremely powerful, and most people were Nerissou. So it's a community that, you know, might not have the longest history of resistance, but that they're finding their voice in the face of, you know, these injustices. And I think that people should follow them and support them help in their struggles.
Thank you so much for outlining that, Frank. So Manwan community is part of the Atikamekw Indigenous Nation, and that is a broader term for the Nerissou. And then there's three different Indigenous communities. And in these short films, you're detailing protests against clear-cutting that affect the traditional territory of the community. It's great to have that background, and also for us to hear a little bit about the context within which you created these short films, both for educational purposes, but also, as I can imagine, to communicate information to try to help develop a solidarity movement. So thanks so much for sharing about that, Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. If I could say one final thing, is that we'll be producing, well, we have more content on our website, amplifierfilms.ca, including fights for the protection of the Salish Sea in the west coast of so-called North America and Turtle Island. We're currently producing a film making links between colonialism in Palestine and in Turtle Island as well, and people should check that out.
That was a conversation with independent filmmaker Frank Lopez. You can learn more about his projects at amplifierfilms.ca. Frank has been making an effort to document the land-based struggles of the indigenous community of the Nerissou, also known widely as Atikamekw. There's a number of different government controlled reservations. This is where indigenous communities have been forced to live in territories regulated by both Quebec and Canadian authorities. This whole story of indigenous people protesting the clear-cutting of their traditional lands, a number of people in the community are opposed to this, and them putting up road blockades, I think really speaks to an important present-day illustration of colonialism today. So thanks again to Frank Lopez for the conversation on Free City Radio for this edition. I'm Stefan Christoph, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 90.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., and on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio, and look us up. We're also a podcast. Just tune in, search Free City Radio. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Stefan Christoph, and I'll be back with you next week.